Welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. 20 years ago, Dr. Beth Ricconati was doing everything right, building a career as a physician, raising three young children, and yet her body was telling her something wasn't working. Chest pain sent her looking for a cardiac diagnosis. What she got instead was a diagnosis of stress. Her approach to dealing with this stress came unexpectedly from a bowl of dough on her kitchen counter. The weekly ritual of making challah, creating the dough, proofing it through rises, braiding it into that beautiful, recognizable loaf became a way of managing her health and eventually became a movement. More than 100 workshops, thousands of participants, rabbis and pastors and judges and teenagers have taken up the ritual of working the same dough. Now she's distilled what she's learned into a new book, The Braided Prescription, Seven Practices for Living Well from the Ancient Ritual of Making Challah. Dr. Ricconati is a board-certified internist, an expert in women's health, and the author of the memoir Braided, A Journey of 1,000 Challahs. She joins us now to talk about what a piece of bread can teach us about intention, imperfection, and getting through the week. Dr. Ricconati, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Let's start with your origin story. You were diagnosed with stress-induced chest pain 20 years ago. As a physician who probably felt you should have recognized signs in yourself, what was it like to be on the receiving end of that diagnosis?
That is a great question, because on the one hand, it was marvelous to have an answer, because there's nothing scarier than not knowing. On the other hand, I thought, oh, come on, really? It's just stress. And it took me a little bit to wrap my head around that and to figure out what I was going to do about that.
Well, let's get into bread.
Yes.
Tell us a little about how this even happened. Why challah? What was it about that particular ritual, as opposed to, say, meditation or exercise or some of the other things that come up to help people deal with stress, that seemed to reach you when nothing else did?
I love that question, because it gets at how I've spent so much of my career. And that is, so I'm an internist, as you mentioned, and one of the basic questions that I have been thinking about for decades is this simple idea of, or maybe not so simple, you know, how do we stay well, right? And sometimes, surprisingly, the answers come in places we least expect. And in my case, it came standing at a kitchen counter. And it came as I was making this bread, challah. And what I realized that's different than meditation and exercise, yoga, and all these other activities that you and I could come up with, is that it was the perfect amalgamation of so much of those, meaning I got to put my hands in a bowl of dough. So the tactile benefit of it. But it also is meditative, right? When you're kneading the dough, it's very relaxing. You might even say perhaps it's a bit of exercise, because when you're stirring those, that's a lot of work. I don't use a bread machine. I don't use, you know, a KitchenAid or anything. I just do myself a bowl and a spoon. And, you know, sure, I'm moving around. But it was the combination of using all of my senses, standing there, you know, that, and, you know, we talked right before we started taping this about the smell of, you know, when you bake the bread, and, you know, the aroma. Mm. So all of it together, it was the perfect metaphor, I realized, to talk about what I wanted to talk about as a physician, about how we can stay well. It's not always, right, about prescribing medication for blood pressure or cholesterol. It's sometimes something much simpler.
Hmm. Your book distinguishes between ritual and routine.
Yes.
Could you walk us through that difference and why it matters so much for the way we manage stress?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you for picking up on that. Rituals and routines are very different, right? So a ritual for me is making challah. It's something special. It's elevated. I set time aside on Fridays. I often lay out the ingredients specifically. In contrast, a routine is walking my dog. I walked her this morning before our conversation, and with all due respect to my lovely dog, I wasn't really paying attention to her. I was answering an email, and I was thinking about who I needed to call, and I was not focused on the task at hand. There's something fundamental about that difference, and we need ritual in our lives. And it can be different for people, that's fine. Everybody can have their own different ritual. I think that's important, actually. But it's important to have a ritual.
I suppose part of that difference might be presence and engagement.
Yes, exactly.
Because maybe somebody, for somebody, perhaps walking their dog and they're in the forest and they're breathing and they're taking in their grounding feelings.
Yes, good point.
The earth.
Good point.
You know, it could be, but right. it's our choice to be present,
yes,
right?
Yes, because you're right. It's about slowing down and paying attention and connecting with one
yes.
another. And for me, walking my dog is about none of that.
Right.
Yeah, for me, yeah. It's just, I got to get her around the block because I've got things to do. However, for me, I have found making challah, I can bring intention to it, the experience. I have to slow down. I have to be present. And then I also, it's a great way to connect with other people because I think about in whose merit I want to make the challah. And then I often now, in fact, not every week, I share the challah with others. So it's a great, you know, I literally break bread with other people. And so for me, that embodies a lot about what a ritual is.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So when I'm just doing things around the house, I tend to listen to books on tape and stuff in my one earbud or whatever. And it makes kind of the mundane tasks that are just part of life go by. And I had it in when I started making some challah because I wanted to make some in anticipation of this interview.
Which I love, by the way. I just have to interject. That is amazing.
Thank you very much. But I realized, no, I'm missing the point. I want to be engaged in this experience. I want it to be tactile. I want to be smelling it. I want to be feeling it and hearing it and all those parts. And so I set down my earbud and reluctantly, and it was a lovely amount of full engagement, that state of flow that Csikszentmihalyi talks about, you know, like once you get into this process of doing one step after another, it's so calming to the nervous system. Tell us more about these seven practices that you kind of were able to distill the elements of making challah into these specific practices and traditions that can help us. Briefly, can you just give us an overview of those?
Yes, so absolutely. So, I started making challah, as you mentioned, about 20 years ago, and learned so much that I wanted to share that. And so that became the genesis for my memoir, Braided, A Journey of 1,000 Challahs. After that came out, I began to teach challah workshops. And in the process of teaching the workshops around the country, what I began to see, which was really exciting, were some of the practices, some of the behaviors during the workshop became similar. I would see the same thing in New York or in Cleveland or in Florida. And through that experience, as well as through readers of the first book and or participants of the workshops reaching out to me and sharing their stories, I was able to really hone in on seven practices that seemed universal and seemed attainable. You know, I think that it's really important to be able to manage stress and to be able to take some control in our lives. I think that's part of living well. And the seven practices, which are ideas such as being more present, right? And leaning into the idea that you don't have to be perfect. In fact, imperfection is okay. In fact, it might be really good sometimes. And building community, because we're in just this crazy loneliness epidemic that honestly was going on before COVID. It's just been amplified recently. So some of these ideas that began to take shape, I wanted to share that as well. And so that's what became the genesis for this book, where I could take some of the medicine and the science behind some of these ideas, coupled with or braided with, no pun intended, but very much intended, some of the stories that the participants and readers had been sharing with me, and I could kind of, I know, braid those together a little bit and present this, because I find that tiny practices matter, right? It's, yes, if you have blood pressure, you have to treat it. Okay, I know that. But I also know the part of being well are engaging in these tiny practices, these simple acts. They really make a difference. You know, so for example, I use the best eggs I can find when I make challah, right? I use the ones my kids make fun of, the farmer's market, the cage-free, pasture, you know, organic, blah, yeah. You know, every label. I challenge you sometime, Mary Beth, to do an experiment and go buy the cheapest egg you can find and the most expensive. Take a glass bowl so you can see them. Crack them, you know, in the two separate bowls and take a look. And in one, you're going to see this pale, anemic looking egg. And in the other, you're going to see this deep, rich saffron. I want those nutrients in my body. And I want those in, if I'm sharing food, in this case, challah, with another, I want to give them something healthy. So it's these tiny little acts that can make a difference. And that's part of what I realized. And so I wanted to share that. And the seven practices are things we can do and we can feel better. And there's data behind it, which I love because, you know, at the heart, I'm all about that.
Well, you start with making the challah in honor of someone with a sense of intention. And I had to catch myself because I was just going to just blow right past that step. I'm like, no. Okay, staying with the program. So I just thought of some people that maybe I would give my second loaf to because I made the two loaves. And even being in that space of like, oh, I could give it to this person, or oh, this person might enjoy it. Oh, maybe I could bring it to the station. Different things put me in such a positive mindset. And I just felt like this is such a feel-good space to be in a time when we don't always have a ton of feel-good moments in our day. So tell us a little bit about that intention process for you or that you've heard from other people.
Yeah, it's really meaningful. What I like to do during the workshops is to go around and ask, in whose merit are you making this challah? Like, what intention are you setting? And sometimes people talk and sometimes they don't. I hope they're at least thinking about it. And it's really interesting, to your point, to hear. Sometimes it can be very I was going to use the word prosaic, but like when our kids were little, it might be as simple as one of the kids had studied for a spelling test and I was really proud of them. But often it's really profound to listen to people talk about it. It can be a health challenge somebody in their family's facing. It could be somebody special in their lives that they are interacting with that week or they had interacted with. Sometimes it's bigger. It can be something that's going on in sort of the current events, if you will, either, you know, within their immediate world or in a larger sense. And I find that such a beautiful way to connect and to bring us all together. I really, really like that. And when I tell people that I've made the dough in their honor, it's amazing to see how that just transforms. And I think that's really special. I try never to, now that I know about that, I didn't know about that sort of aspect of making challah initially. And now that I know about it, I try never to forget. I think there's something absolutely magical about stopping to think about who you want to make that bread for that week. And by the way, it can be for yourself. Don't forget, like, we're worth it too.
I love that. I love the fact that even if it's for yourself, even it's for your immediate family, what a beautiful act of service that is.
Exactly.
To your family and yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, another one of the practices is, as you mentioned, making peace with imperfection. Tell us a little bit about what that means for you and for how you deal with yourself.
My absolute favorite quote is, "Perfect is the enemy of good." And it came because I am a perfectionist and things usually are never good enough. And that is not a great space to live in, quite frankly. And one of the lovely things about making challah, and I do this every week, is some weeks it is magical and some weeks it's a disaster. And it's a great reminder that things don't have to be perfect. They can be good enough. And I can say that, but I don't always believe it, Mary Beth. And so what's so nice about this particular ritual is I do get to do it again and again and again. And I find that the more I embrace the imperfection, the easier it is to take that out of the kitchen. And in fact, all of these practices I really like because you can, you know, I say this in quotes, but you can take them out of the kitchen. You can take them into your life. And the more we do them, the more we practice them, the easier that is. And so when something else isn't as perfect, that's okay. That's okay.
And that's why this, like a lot of things in life, is called a practice.
Exactly.
You know, we have a spiritual practice. We have traditional practices. We even practice parenting.
Yes.
We practice our instruments, all these things. I mean, life is a practice. And if we think that it's one and done, we probably are setting our little perfectionist selves up for disappointment.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is not healthy. So as a physician, I will tell you that is not healthy either.
There's a lot of romanticism in the zeitgeist lately about doing things in the authentic traditional ways and kind of a growing interest in the zen of taking up grandma hobbies like knitting or canning. Your approach seems to want to acknowledge a deeper resonance than just being retro chic or finding baking relaxing. What led you to want to go to this more profound, even sacred aspect of the ritual?
I didn't necessarily realize what I was doing when I started. I made this initially at the suggestion of a girlfriend for the Jewish New Year, and I thought it was a crazy idea. I wasn't a baker. I had these three little kids. I could barely get out the door in the morning. The idea of making homemade bread was anathema to me. And yet I found in the process a way to heal myself. And I also found a way to engage in this beautiful ancient ritual that was part of my religion that I knew nothing about. And the more I leaned into that, the more profound it became. And we started having Shabbat, Friday night dinners, and now we do that most nights, and we're 20 years later, and we have dinner with friends, and it doesn't matter your religion. This isn't about religion per se. I think every culture has ritual. I think every culture has ways that we can learn to slow down and be more present and be more attentive. I just was fortunate enough to discover this one. The principles, though, are universal.
They are. And speaking of that, I feel like sometimes in these days of people trying to be respectful and avoid cultural appropriation, it can be a tricky line to walk, you know, knowing what's okay to take part in, even if it's not your background or your spiritual tradition. Is it all right for non-Jews to say the Hebrew prayer over the challah?
Like, I think so.
I think it would be more disrespectful not to myself, but.
No, I think that's a great question. And it's been really interesting, by the way, as I've done these workshops, because I do them with all kinds of people all over the country. And I've learned so much that, you know, I personally don't care what people say at that moment, in the sense that what I do care is that you take a moment. So in the Jewish tradition, the mitzvah of making challah is to separate the piece of dough before we bake it and to say a blessing. For me, that just elevates the whole experience. With that said, I think what is so important is to stop and elevate the experience. So when I've done this with a group of Catholic women, for example, and they said a beautiful Catholic prayer, fantastic. I learned something they stopped and elevated the moment. So I don't think it necessarily matters what people do. I love when someone tries to say the Hebrew blessing. I think that's pretty cool. But I also think that this is a ritual that can be embraced by all people of different cultures, and we can bring what we want to it and bring our own culture to it. I think that's really beautiful, actually.
As a physician, do you ever have a moment where you're trying to square the food as medicine practice with this practice that centers on bread, which some people would say is not our healthiest offering?
I actually love to use this example because I think that most things, almost everything, but obviously not everything, almost everything in moderation is a great lesson. And so I like to use the example of challah to sometimes push back on people's idea about nutrition and health. This recipe is 6 ingredients, and I can actually pronounce them all, and I know what they are, right? You know, Michael Pollan has this great saying, like, if you can't, you know, if your grandmother can't
recognize it or something,
right, then maybe you shouldn't be eating it. And I think that's so true. I mean, I challenge you, walk into your local grocery store this afternoon, pick up a loaf of sandwich bread in the bread aisle and turn it over and read the label that's going to be the length of the back of the package and try and pronounce all those chemicals. And I don't know what that is, but this is just flour, sugar, salt, eggs, yeast, and oil. I know what those are, and they're real foods. I think part of our issue right now too is a lot of people eat a lot of processed and prepared foods. I would rather eat real food. We've been eating bread for millennia. Real bread,
right?
Not processed bread.
Our bodies
bread.
Know what to do with real food.
Yeah, exactly. So in moderation, you know, a slice or two of challah, it's fine.
Good for the soul and good for the body.
Totally.
In moderation.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So it is a great gateway conversation. I actually really, really welcome that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Of course, of course. Well, we're almost out of time, but if a listener takes nothing else from this conversation with Dr. Beth Ricconati about her new book, The Braided Prescription, 7 Practices for Living Well from the Ancient Ritual of Making Challah, what's one small act of intention you'd like them to consider trying this week?
I would like for listeners to remember the following. Don't wait. Don't wait for a health crisis to start taking care of yourself, right? Health is not built in the big dramatic moments. I think our health and well-being is actually built in these ordinary moments, Mary Beth, in the way you begin your morning. Maybe you have a ritual cup of coffee tomorrow morning, or in the meals that you share. Do a family dinner, for example, or once a week have a special meal. It's the people we reach out to. You know, did you call fill in the blank today? I love these tiny rituals. I love when we return to them again and again. And I would say that's probably the healthiest thing we can do today.
I think that's the word of the day. Thank you so much, Dr. Beth, for being with us today on The Mountain Life. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Mary Beth.